Terry Savage, the Money Lady, joins us again on a Friday. This has been our routine the last couple of weeks, but we'll go back to the Wednesday drill in the new year. Hi, Terry. How are you?
Hello. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you. It was a good year, wasn't it, 2024?
Oh, my goodness. It was a great year. If you were talking about the financial markets, I would say nobody could have predicted this, except, of course, Dr. Bob did. More about that later. But, you know, we had a series of down weeks at the end of the year. But nonetheless, if we start the new year right, we should realize the S&P 500 was up over 23% last year, and that is on top of a gain of 24% from the year before, a two-year gain of 53%, the best since the late 1990s. The NASDAQ last year was up over 30%. The Dow only up just a smidge under 13%. But no matter where you were, if you bought the market, that S&P 500 index fund that's in your 401k plan, you have nothing to complain about. And of course, I can hear your breathing. I know you're going to say, but will it do it this year? And you know, John, that I don't forecast. But in 2 weeks, we'll have that Executives Club economic forecast. And then we'll have Dr. Bob on our regular Wednesday show. He has not told me what he's going to say. Surprise is the element for that luncheon, which you can find out more at executivesclub.org. I think it's sold out, but we will report the next day.
He did preview that for us in that he is optimistic. He's bullish in 2025 as well, but he didn't give us how bullish, did he?
He didn't give us any numbers. So I don't want to ever put words in Dr. Bob's mouth, but think about it. Honestly, it's only been once before that I can remember that we've had this kind of double-digit gains. And after, here's what I would have said, and probably if we had a tape from the first show of last year, I would have said, oh my goodness, the market was up. The S&P 500 was up nearly 25%. Be conservative now, rebalance your account, because that's very unusual. The long-term historic average is 10.1% with dividends reinvested. So you should be rebalancing your account. I would have said that last year. I did it. And I would have said that. I will say that to you again. Never confuse. This is an old Wall Street saying. Never confuse genius with a bull market. It's not because you're a great investor. The market was the beneficiary of a lot of additional liquidity and short-term rates coming down a bit. I think the watchword for this year ahead is sort of be balanced and hold your breath, because so much will change, but we don't know what it is. We're going to have major changes, not only politically, but in the economy, that'll impact businesses and consumers. It's at the very least, it's going to be interesting 2025.
Well, I wonder what the markets would have been like for 2024 were it not for NVIDIA and a handful of tech companies and AI. That drove, it seems, so much of our conversation. I wonder if you factored that out.
Well, the NASDAQ is tech heavy, and of course that was up, but the S&P 500 is also heavily weighted toward tech stocks. But even the Dow, which was the big laggard, was up almost 13%. So, I mean, that's part of a bull market. So yeah, you had to be aware things were going well, but if you were, you didn't have to be a genius, because all you had to do was buy S&P 500 stock index.
What does Terry Savage say? You don't need to beat the market. You need to be the market.
And exactly.
That would have worked good the last 2 years. Somebody, though, commented to us last week when one of us was saying something like this, and they said, well, most folks don't have 401ks. If the markets are up again next year, what does that mean to a person who's less fortunate? Maybe they got a pension plan, and I guess that would benefit too. But I wonder what it says about the prospects for Americans who aren't in the market in the future.
Well, that's a really good point. Let's start with this. I'm going to look up during the break the percentage of Americans who have access to a 401k of American workers. All the rest do have access to an individual retirement account. Now, there are a lot of people that don't have, quote, extra money to save. So let's talk about those. They are not invested, not because they didn't sign up for the company plan or they didn't open an IRA, which is easy to do, but because they're just struggling. The fact that the market is up is a reflection of the investor's outlook for future positive earnings growth of the public companies reflected in those indexes. If those companies are doing well, reflected by a higher market, that means jobs are available. That means business is good, that there will be more jobs. So in a way, even if you are, I mean, this is kind of patronizing to say, even if you don't have an IRA with that index fund in it, you are indirectly benefiting from the fact that the market says the economy's good, you should be able to have a job. And in fact, most people do have a job. May not pay as much as you want, but the fact is there are jobs there. We have almost the lowest unemployment on record. So all of this is really good news for everyone. And let's just say if something happened to turn this around, we had a bear market. In those cases, not because their stocks are down, but because that reflects the outlook for companies that are public companies, you can be sure that's the point at which they start cutting jobs. So
yeah, right.
We're in a good moment right now is what I'm saying. This is a very sweet spot.
I think that last point is a really good way to put it, too. Trust me, a bad market does nobody any good, that's for sure. It's 1216. Terry Savage is here, 312. Well, if you give us a call now, we'll be able to take some text messages or take your phone calls as well. 312, what's the phone number here, Pete? It's 312-981-7200. Are you
Isn't
sure about
it?
That, Terry? It's been so long since I've done this. give us a call. Some of you know it better than I do. Terry, exactly. I agree with you. I find it ironic how some outlets have been saying we're all doing so terribly. Well, that's on the media, I think. If a politician says we're doing terribly, the quandary for people in broadcasting would be, do we just report that politician X said the economy is terrible, or do we then correct them with statistics and refute their point? I don't think the media does a real good job of that, but that's where we are right now.
All right. Let me take that one point I wanted to make, because it is really the opposite side of the coin. So you asked me kind of an opposite side of the coin thing. Well, what if you weren't in the stock market? And I said, yeah, but generally speaking, that barometer of the economy means that you've got jobs, so that's all good. Now, I just posted my first column of the new year, and it deals with credit card debt. Now, maybe these chickens are going to come home to roost this year. Credit card debt is at an all-time high. At the end of the third quarter, we don't have the fourth quarter, but as of November, mid-third quarter in November, $1.17 trillion outstanding on credit cards. Average rate, more like 23%. This doesn't count, by the way, all those pay-it-off-in-four payments that you do, you know, for Klarna or Afterpay or Affirm or Zip, which was $75 billion in 2023 to add to that. So the fact is, we know people are buried in debt. And it's fine as long as you have a job and you can keep making the minimum monthly payment. If you don't, it becomes just an avalanche that will destroy you. I won't go off on my, you know, preaching up on the pulpit here, but in the new column up at terrysavage.com, I have two things that if you or someone you know, your adult children, your brother-in-law, whoever it is, just send that column to them. The first is the secret formula for paying off your debt. You know, you could wind up, if you're just making the minimum payments, it could take over 31 years to pay off the debt. And along the way, you pay five times what you charged. The secret formula is up there. And second of all, I know what's going to happen. We're going to get calls about late night commercials. You're up at 3 a.m. We're here to help you get out of debt. Just send us one check and then we'll take it and we'll negotiate and you'll da-da-da-da-da. Meantime, they destroy your credit and maybe put your house at risk or your paycheck at risk for garnishment. So you want to get trusted help, and that's why there's a big red box also on the homepage of terrysavage.com featuring how to get help at the National Foundation for Credit Counseling or the do-it-yourself quick way to pay off your debt in less than 3 years. So this is the moment to face it, especially mm-hmm. because so much of it is buried below the tip of the iceberg with these Afterpay services where that's not credit card debt, but you have to pay it.
Let's try and go quickly, Terry. All of our phone lines are busy with calls and lots of text messages for you also. John, please thank Terry for talking about the elimination of the windfall provision of Social Security. It allowed me to retire sooner. Thank you for this segment. John, please ask Terry about the Social Security Act that is to be signed by President Biden. Any comment on that, Terry?
I keep expecting, and probably now, maybe next week, that there will be some giant Rose Garden ceremony to celebrate the end, the elimination of the windfall elimination provision and GPO, which reduces Social Security benefits for people who also have public employee pensions. There's a big article about explaining it at terrysavage.com. The president mm-hmm. did sign a whole bunch of bills in the kind of slow week, but I would imagine they're trying to make a big deal out of the signing of this.
Tom, you're on with Terry Savage on the Wintrust Business Lunch. How can we help you?
Sir, Terry, I listen to you all the time. Forget it.
Don't go.
Sorry about that, Tom. How about you, Marcia? Can we help you? You're on WGN. Hi.
Yes. Thank you, Terry, for taking my call. I have a question. When you pass away, how does Social Security handle that final payment? For instance, if you've always gotten paid on the 1st of the month and you die on the 21st, are you owed any additional money?
No. In fact, they sometimes come in and take it back. Okay. I've had a lot of questions about that. It's a very technical thing. When you die, your Social Security payments stop, except if there's a lump sum benefit to your children. Now, the Social Security check is paid for the month after. It's paid for the benefits that you earned the month before. So the payment may continue, but I've heard of Social Security benefits being clawed back. You know what? You won't be around to worry about it.
Yeah. Well, actually, I'm asking because my mother just passed away, and she passed away on December 21st, and they've already stopped it, but we thought maybe we would get a prorated amount.
Yeah.
No, you're not due any Social Security benefits for the month of your death, the person's death.
Okay.
And any benefit that's paid after the month of the person's death will be clawed back or refunded.
Okay.
So, yeah.
All right. Thank you very much.
If the person dies in August, the check for that month is paid in September, but that needs to be returned.
Which just makes that lousy Christmas you may have just had a little bit lousier. I'm sorry to hear about that. Mary, you're on WGN. What's your question with Terry Savage? Hi, Mary. Are you there?
I'm here. This is regarding the windfall elimination bill. How soon will that go into effect?
That is a great question, Mary. According to the way the legislation was written, it should have started because they were debating this all through 2024. It was for every benefit check after the year end, December 2023. Therefore, theoretically, based on the way it was written, you would get just a giant check for all the 12 months of 2024. I am quite sure that first of all, it'll take them a while to reprogram. They're such a mess. So we'll be lucky if it goes into effect in 2025. That remains to be seen, however.
Okay.
Oh.
Yeah.
Don't cash that check until it comes.
we'll be certain to follow that story. A lot of you are very interested in that.
Okay.
Obviously.
You don't have to apply, though, correct?
No, you don't have to apply. That will happen automatically.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Good luck to you, Mary. Thanks for the call. I'm looking at producer Pete. Pete, do we continue to take calls here? Yeah. Okay. Then let's go with this question that was texted in. Hey, Terry, what are your thoughts on investing a lump sum of $100,000 in an S&P index fund right now? I want to be smart about this. And with the market so high, it seems like it's due for a correction. $100,000, they're going to put it in the market. What should they do, Terry?
Okay. So first of all, you just said you're going to put it in the market. It depends on who you are and where you are. But I would suggest that you probably don't want to but you never know what the top and the bottom is. So you've determined, number one, you've paid down your credit card debt that's costing you 20%+. You've determined that you have enough chicken money on the side. You could buy T-bills paying about 4.3% for 6 months. But you really want to expose this to the whole stock market. The way I would handle this is I would put $10,000 or $15,000 a month in on the 9th of the month. Just pick a date and have it automatically transferred from a money market fund at Fidelity or Vanguard into the S&P 500 index fund. And I would do that 5 or 6 or 10 times or whatever it is until you get all the money invested. Just because personally I hate looking back and going, I did it on January 7th. If I had only waited till February 19th, it would have been better. So just don't try and pick the top or pick the timing. Spread out. My way of approaching it would be to spread it out over 6, 8, 10 months, mm-hmm. something like that.
I thought you'd say something like that. Would you say the same to this guy? Please ask Terry Savage, where is the safest place for a 76-year-old married male retiree to put my $1 million now that I'm out of the stock market?
Well, you're out of the stock market. Okay, that's fine. That ought to carry you probably, depending on your spending habits, through the rest of your life. And I would stagger purchases of U.S. Treasury bills, six-month T-bills, currently yielding 4.3%. So I'd leave it in a bank money market account and do the same kind of a thing. Stagger purchases, maybe $50,000 once or twice a month in 3 or 6 month Treasury bills, and then have them automatically renew. That way the money keeps rolling over, the interest will drop back into your bank account, and you'll have some taxable income, federally income taxed, not state income taxed. You won't get rich, but you won't get poor.
That's the object of the game if you got $1 million and you're 76.
Exactly.
It's 12:30. The next question, and I'll ask you to answer it after the news, is about 529 plans. Here's a family trying to get kids through college, and they're wondering where best to put the money. We'll get to that with Terry Savage, the money lady, 312-981-7200. You can call or text. Yes, it's Friday, but most folks weren't around on Wednesday. That included a lot of us. So Terry said, let's do Friday. And it's a busy show. Lots of questions for you, Terry.
Okay.
TerrySavage.com is her website. The Money Lady joins us most Wednesdays. Ready to take more questions from our listeners, Terry?
Absolutely. But I just have to tell you, during the break, I had to Google. John, do you know about the Duke Mayo Bowl? Am I the only one that had to look that up?
Yeah. What about it?
Seriously. There's some kind of mayonnaise called Duke's Mayonnaise. Just in case you wonder why we keep reporting on tonight's Duke's Mayo Bowl. I guess it's been 3 or 4 years they've sponsored a bowl that used to be sponsored by Meineke Car Care and Belk's Department Store and Continental Tire. So I never even heard of Duke's Mayo. But okay, let's do money because I know nothing about sports, obviously.
Well, that's why they do it then, isn't it? Because didn't know about their mayonnaise brand, if you didn't know about Toaster Pop-Tarts, if you didn't know
Pop-Tarts,
about...
Pop-Tarts, that was another one that blew me away.
Yeah, well, and lo and behold, the big they've gained some celebrity status, the mascot at those games. So that's okay. Good marketing, I guess.
It's marketing, it's financial. Okay, let's do the questions.
Well, okay, so I want to go back to this listener who has a couple of kids in college. Let me click back up to this. Hey, Terry, 529s and paying for college education. I've got a college freshman and two younger kids, college freshmen and two maybe middle school or high school kids. We are not fully funded in 529 to pay the current tuition. So we're adding to the freshman's 529 monthly and withdrawing to pay tuition. Should this be an aggressive fund, a moderate one, a more conservative level 529? I guess you get to pick. What advice do you have for this family?
Yeah, I think you're fooling yourself. Nowhere in here did you talk about financial aid or loans, so we'll leave that aside. The whole point of a 529 is over the years to invest reasonably aggressively. Gee, if you had been, you know, I always say get very conservative the year or two before college. If you had done that, you would have missed out on some great tax-free gains in the last 2 years. But the whole point of putting it in and then taking it out, you don't want to speculate in there and lose the money just when you need it. So I would just not bother with that. I would take the money out of the 529 to pay for tuition and supplement with your own money that you've got in a money market fund for your child. You don't have to run it through the 529 because the whole purpose is tax-free growth for college. And if you're not willing to speculate and lose over the next year or two, which you could, we had a down year, then you'd be kicking yourself. That's not how I would organize my finances.
Right. Although for the kids that are maybe underclassmen in high school, they might imagine they've got 8 years of potential growth by the time that kid graduates
from college.
Absolutely. But
I think you said kids are in college, so that's why.
One is in college and two younger ones.
Yeah, you can keep putting money in for the younger kids and then get more conservative when they're in high school.
John, I'm sure you answered this previously, but we have a couple of 401ks and a few IRAs. Do we need to take the required minimum distribution from each 401k and then group the IRAs together and take another one from there?
You've got it exactly right, and I'm going to make your life simpler. You know, all the stuff we talk about is probably in a column at terrysavage.com, and right under my columns on the left-hand side of my website, you can put in words that will help you search those columns. And there is a column called Rollover Now, and it shows you how to take those old left-behind 401ks and roll them into an IRA rollover. The advantage of doing, there's only one disadvantage. If your old 401k has some spectacular proprietary investment that you want to leave it in, okay, fine. But the idea of rolling over those disparate accounts, it lets you know what you own, it lets you diversify your investments, and you can lump together all your IRAs and take your RMD, required minimum distribution, from any one of them. But if you have a 401k, you must take an RMD once you're over 73, the year you turn 73. You must take it from each individual old 401k. No reason to leave that hanging behind there. Go under columns, put in the words rollover now. You'll see just a tutorial on how to do the rollover.
Good to know. TerrySavage.com. By the way, Terry, the phones, the text message line, everybody is very excited to talk to you now about Duke's mayonnaise.
Well, and you learn something new every day. Thank you.
That Duke's mayonnaise is delicious, Terry.
It is delicious. Is it available in Chicago? Must be, I
believe
guess.
It is. I haven't bought mayonnaise lately. We do have some gourmet mayonnaise in my fridge. It may be that, but it's very, very good.
Okay. All right. I thought I'd bring out the Hellmann's and bring out the best. I mean, I'm old-fashioned. Okay.
Bob, you're on WGN with Terry Savage. How can we help you?
Yes. Hi, Bob. Terry, I have some questions. First of all, I want to thank you for helping people out with questions that they have under finances, especially seniors and so forth. And I have some annuities, Terry, and I'm 75 years old. They're fixed annuities, where a guaranteed amount of interest. My question is, I have my son and my daughter as the beneficiary on that equally. In my passing, would that money be, could it be, I guess, to the state? What do they call that, probate? Would it go to probate necessarily?
Well, it has a beneficiary. Part of this depends on the exact product you have. There's only one place that I would tell you, I would trust you to connect and find out whether you might be better off starting to draw money out of the annuity now. This may not be something you want to leave to your beneficiaries, and in fact you might need the income, and there's a point when you get to this stage where the smart move might be to be drawing out. So the one guru who is always as much on people's side as I am on people's side is Stan the Annuity Man. If you go to stantheannuityman.com and you sign up for a call and you give them the kind of annuity you have, because how long you've had it and what the terms of it are very significant in this decision. You can trust his advice on what will happen to it, A, after your death, or B, whether the smart move might not be to start taking income from it.
Okay, so it's Stan, S-T-A-N, the Annuity Man.
.com, yes, Stan, the Annuity Man.com. I know it sounds
can
weird.
Can I get his phone number?
You go right to standtheannuityman.com, book an appointment, free appointment. They're not trying to sell you anything. And feel free to use my name. I'm on his podcast a lot. He's been on mine. And just say, Terry Savage said she couldn't answer my question about what to do with my annuities, but that you could. You'll get a smile.
Okay, that sounds good. Thank you, Bob. By the way, somebody else texted this in. Hey, Terry Savage, if you live in Indiana and contribute to a 529, you get a 20% tax credit on your Indiana return. So in that way, it's free money. I don't know if that listener asking about that was from Indiana or not, but that's
Illinois,
good to know.
Illinois, you can deduct from your contribution up to $10,000. That might make a difference on your state income tax.
Good to know. Okay, let's pick it up here in just a moment. We've got other business news to cover, though. And with that, here's Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. Companies that make products with alcohol, including Chicago-based Molson Coors, are seeing dropping share prices. The declines follow an announcement by the U.S. Surgeon General that alcohol products like beer and wine should carry warnings about links to cancer. Surgeon General Vivek Murthy says less than half of Americans recognize the risk of drinking alcohol. Cancer rates have been rising with about 100,000 cases and 20,000 related deaths each year. Molson Coors shares fell 3% at one point. Other companies, including AB InBev and Constellation Brands, also fell. The Surgeon General says direct links have been shown between alcohol and throat, mouth, esophagus, voice box, colon, liver, and breast cancers. A Chicago-based technology startup that connects social media influencers with companies has been acquired by a Boston firm. Cranes reports Mavely has been bought for $250 million by Later. Mavely's platform has more than 100,000 influencers connected to 1,400 brands. The companies use the influencers to promote and sell products. Later and Mavely had previously worked together as part of a partnership. Mavely has 75 employees, mostly in Chicago, with plans to hire more staff this year. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Okay, here's the business of food then with Steve Alexander.
Yeah, thank you. Here's a guy with a perfect name for what he does.
My name is Ray Stout.
And I'll tell you what he does after I thank the Chevy Silverado for sponsoring us today. There's never been a better time to put a Silverado in your toolbox. Find out how at ChevyDriveChicago.com. Okay, back to our guy who has the perfect name.
Sure. My name is Ray Stout. I'm the executive director of the Illinois Craft Brewers Guild.
Is there a better name for someone in the beer business than Stout?
People always tell me that they think I made it up or I'm born for this job, so it's one of the two.
And he says amid some ups and downs, craft brewing remains a big business in Illinois.
The craft brewing industry in Illinois is about a $3 billion a year industry.
With just under 300 breweries statewide and about 160 in Chicago.
One of the most brewer-centric cities in the nation.
And the Illinois craft brewers pump out a lot of beer.
We're producing nearly 400,000 barrels of beer.
And a lot of paychecks. There are nearly 16,000 full-time jobs. Plus, these are small businesses for the most part, generally located in neighborhoods with
tasting rooms or brew pubs where you could come in and sample the beer. Many of them offer food. And by and large, are real gathering places for their communities.
And worldwide, we are kind of a big deal.
People are traveling to seek out Illinois beers. They're coming to the state specifically to visit breweries.
But they're not coming in January, which is the slowest month of the year for craft beer. And to drum up some business, the Guild is having a Fill Your Fridge with Beer contest, the third annual.
We're encouraging folks to head to their favorite craft brewery or bottle shop or retailer and stock up on Illinois brewed beer.
Yeah, take a picture, post it on social media, tag it with your favorite brewery.
And including hashtag MyILBeerFridge.
And you'll have a chance to win weekly prizes for more beer. The hashtag again is MyILBeerFridge. And even if you're doing a dry January, you'll be stocked up when it's over. On the food calendar, from the cherry farms of Michigan to your belly, it is National Chocolate-Covered Cherry Day. I'm Steve Alexander. That's the business of food on 720 WGN.
Terry Savage joins us on the Wintrust Business Lunch on this Friday, and then again next Wednesday. Terry, anything else you want to drop in here now before we go back to questions?
Yeah, let's do all these questions.
Yeah, we got a lot of them from both the phone line and the text line. Hey, Terry, what percent do I need to take out each year for my RMD, the required minimum distribution?
I'll give you two ways to find that out. It's not an automatic percent. it, of course, depends on the value. Well, this is really a critical point. Your RMD that you needed to have taken out in 2024 was based on the year-end 2023 total of your retirement accounts, your IRAs, or your 401k. So now you're about to get your January statement with your December 31st valuation. So say you have an IRA at Fidelity and Vanguard and T. Rowe Price, and each one has $100,000 in it. Your total is $300,000. You will, if you go to terrysavage.com and just put the word RMD under columns, every year I write a column called Time to Do Your RMD, and inside that column is a link to a calculator, or you can just Google RMD calculator, or you can go to your Fidelity or Vanguard website and put in your age, the amount of in your total of your IRAs, and it will tell you what you have to take out, the dollar amount you have to take out. It won't change throughout the year. It's based on your year-end 2024 statement, which will be in your mailbox in the next couple of weeks. Write those down or clip them together if you have three or four. Total them up. And then do run the calculation. When do you take it out? Whenever you want. You want to wait till December next year? Fine, leave it invested. You want to, suddenly maybe you have a $25,000 RMD required. You want to take out $2,000 a month? You can do that. But your total RMD will never change, and it's calculated on a calculator, and it's not a fixed percentage. It's based on your age, and so you have to go through the calculator.
And do you do that every year, Terry? You said it would never change.
Yes, every year you have a new RMD based on your new year-end valuation from the previous year and the fact that you're a year older.
It's 12:54. Producer Pete, lots of phone calls. Who's next in the queue? Who do we go to next, Pete? You like, let's see. okay, Robin, I'm going to get to you. I'm sure going to try. Stay there. But I want to read this question, too. Terry, could you repeat the advice you gave to that gentleman with $1 million to invest? Any suggestions or recommendations on how to take RMD money from accounts in 2025? And you just answered that, I think, very nicely. But in general, I don't know who these people are with some sort of windfall, but I think some people might have exited the market and now they want to know what to do with that money.
Okay, but again, let's just say this. It's very personal, okay? It depends on what stage of life you're at. You may look back and go, oh, darn, I sold in December 2024, and the market went on to be Dow 50,000. Or you may go look back next year and go, oh, am I so glad I sold in December. It's down to 29,000. I mean, anything could happen in the stock market in the year ahead. A lot of exciting and interesting things will happen. That doesn't matter. You can never know in advance. So if you say, I have X money, I want to put it in the stock market, you can ask 14 people, and some of them will say, wait till February, wait till March after the tariffs, wait till this. My idea is just to kind of put it in on a regular basis, pick a date, put it all in the money market fund at Fidelity and say, okay, on the 9th, the 7th, the 14th, any date of the month you pick, move $10,000 into the S&P 500 index fund. It's a discipline, and it guarantees you'll never be right, but you'll never be terribly wrong.
Let's pick up a phone line. Sharon, you're on WGN with Terry Savage. How can we help you?
I'd like to know if I should sell my Walgreens stock.
Yeah. I don't give individual stock advice. Walgreens is a very sad story. For many years, I used to go out and speak to their corporate offices about people using their 401k plan and financial planning. It's a very sad story. I don't know what will happen with Walgreens going down. They're a victim of bad, bad management decisions over the last years.
And she's sitting on that. So maybe somebody will buy them. Maybe the stock will rebound. But that's your concern, right, Sharon?
I've had it for years and years, and I've watched it go up and down. And my main concern now is I heard that somebody might buy it that'll take it private, and I'm wondering if I'd be better off to sell before that happens or wait and hope that that happens and they pay the stockholders a decent price.
I'm honestly, I can't give you an answer. I just don't know.
I think it's a good question, and I want you to pursue that. That is the question, Sharon. Thanks for the phone call. Thanks for the time. We can readdress this another day, but we're out of time today. Terry, it's good to hear you. Thanks for agreeing to join us on Friday, and we'll do it again next Wednesday.
Yes, let's do it Wednesday. We'll have more time. Sorry to end on such a down note. Look, I want to end on an up note, John. You get to start a new year. So number one, take a look. You had a fabulous year if you were invested in the stock market. Do you have too much risk now? It all depends on where you are in your life. You're young? Let's keep investing. It's America. You're retired? Maybe think about adjusting somewhat, putting some in the money market fund. And if you're listening, not because you want to know what stock to do with a particular stock or how to invest, but because you would like to get even and have money to invest, please deal with your debt early this year, because that burden of 20% is just the exact upside down of the stock market. The stock market is your money working for you, and debt is your money working against you. There's a new column up at terrysavage.com, how to get out of debt. Take that advice, please.
We'll talk to you next week, Terry.
Absolutely.